हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
सुतत्व सूत्र तत्व संदर्भ अध्याय 3 अधिकरण 3 Understanding the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, page 72. Srila Baladeva Vibhushana from Jivatosha. No, excuse me. Because the three sense deity and gross organ perform their functions with mutual dependence, they cannot be the shelter of each other. That is explained. He who knows the three sense deity and gross organ is the shelter. Quote, since the pure jiva is called the witness of the senses and body, it functions independently. Why do you not say the jiva is the shelter of the three? The jiva is the amsha, and the paramatma is the amshi. Both are accepted as the shelter. Does that make sense? So, in other words, you're looking at this delineation of the adiyatmak, adidaivik, and adibhautik is then to establish that the jiva is independent from the body. You know, that means material world. But at the same time, is dependent upon the Supreme Lord. Right? Because the jiva is the shelter of these three. In that, because it's there, these three are functioning. But the jiva is not the source of these three, or the maintenance of these three. Because the shelter has to be someone who is maintaining. Yes. So that makes sense? So they're trying to establish that. Now, some of the Mayavadis, and that will take it, see, the jiva is the shelter, so that makes the jiva's God, this, that, God. But we're saying, no, he's the shelter, but he's still not God. Srila Prabhupada clarifies the relationship between the dependent and independent ashrayas. Right? So they're both shelters, but one's dependent and one's independent. Right? So the jiva is independent of the three adiyatmak, adidaivik, and adibhautik, but that doesn't mean that it is independent on its own. Right? Without our having eyes, the sunlight is useless. And without sunlight, the eyes are useless. Thus, they are interdependent, and none of them is independent. Therefore, the natural question arises concerning who made them interdependent. The one who has made such a relationship of interdependence must be ultimately completely independent, as stated in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The ultimate source of all independent objects is the complete independent subject, Surat. Right, because they're objects, so he's the subjects. Right? This ultimate source of all interdependence is the Supreme Truth, or Paramatma, or the Supersoul, who is not dependent on anything else. He is Sva-ashraya. He is only dependent on himself. And thus, he is the supreme shelter of everything. The individual is under the clutches of illusory energy, and therefore, although qualitatively one with the Supersoul, he is under the illusion of identifying himself with matter. And to get out of this illusory conception of factual life, the individual soul has to depend on the Supersoul to be recognized as one with him. In that sense, also the Supersoul is the supreme shelter, and there's no doubt about it. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.9, purport. So, clear on that? So they're trying to establish then the ultimate shelter, right? But the living entity is functioning in the world, because if we're talking spiritual life, it has to be in the context of the living entity, right? It doesn't matter if we're talking spiritual life in context of your armchair or your toaster, right? Because the point is that's they are not interested in self-realization, nor are they making any endeavor, right? Does that make sense? So it has to be in relationship with the jiva. But so that means then all this is there because of the connection with the jiva. But the jiva is coming from the Lord, and all the material elements and that are there and their functioning is coming from the Lord. So you have to see He's the ultimate shelter. So that's the point of the 10 topics. Because these other things on, when you're talking about the demigods, the sense objects, you're talking about the creation, the secondary creation, you're talking about the Mahatattva, you're talking about liberation, you're talking about maintenance of the universe, there's so many aspects you're talking about. But all those have their shelter in the Supreme. Okay, so this is Srila Baladeva Vibhushan again. Not satisfied, another meaning is given. Let the jiva be the shelter. In Srimad Bhagavatam 6.4.25, Puman means the jiva. The jiva knows all these and the gunas. Sarvam Puman Veda Gunams Cha Taj Gya Vritti. Srila Sutta Goswami will draw the same conclusion from a slightly different angle in the next Anucheda while explaining the characteristics of a Mahapurana. 61. Right, so means you can either say let the jiva be the shelter, but then the point is Krishna is known as jiva, right? Sankarshan is jiva because he's the source of the jivas. Right? Anucheda 61. Speaking of the Bhagavatam's characteristics as a Mahapurana in another way. Footnote 28. A slightly different list of the 10 characteristics of a Mahapurana is given in the 12th canto. It is stated that the Lord, not the jiva, is the shelter or ashraya. O Brahmana, authorities on the matter understand a Purana to contain 10 characteristic topics. The creation of this universe, the subsequent creation of worlds and beings, the maintenance of all living beings, their sustenance, the rule of various manus, the dynasty of great kings, the activities of such kings, annihilation, the jiva, and the supreme shelter. Other scholars state that the great Puranas deal with these 10 topics, while lesser Puranas may deal with 5. Right? Because the lesser ones will deal with the creation, recreation, they'll deal with the kings, they'll deal with the Prajapatis. And the Manus. Right, so it's contained within the 10. So this list basically is a little closer to having the 5 and adding 5 more. Right? Antarani means manvantaras. Also, there are 5 characteristics according to some. The 5 characteristics of a Purana are sarga, pratisarga, vamsa, manvantaras, and vamsanucharitam. Right, so sarga will be primary creation. Pratisarga, the secondary creation. Vamsa will be the Prajapatis and how all the living entities are coming from them. Then down from the Prajapatis level, that means, cause so you have Krishna's level at Sarga, Pratisarga, Brahma's level, Vamsa, that'll be the Prajapatis, Manvantaras, that'll be the Manus, and Vamsanucharitam, that'll be the kings. So you're getting histories on all those 5 levels. Right? But you're not really dealing with the supreme, how it's maintained, you know, the ultimate goal, any of these aspects. Does that make sense? Yeah. The different opinion, 5 characteristics instead of 10, is based on the distinction between major and minor Puranas, whether they are voluminous or small. Though Vishnu Purana and others have 10 characteristics, some are said to be minor because of the prominence of the 5 characteristics, footnote 29. The following chart depicts how the 10 topics relate to the 5. 5 topics of the minor Purana, Sarga, Pratisarga, Vamsa, Manu, Vamsanu, Charitam. And then 10 topics of a major Purana, Sarga, Visarga, Ashraya, Nirodha, Mukti, Ishanukata, Manvantara, Sthanam, Ishana Kata, Poshanam, Ut, Uti, and Ashraya. Okay.
C'est important pour un Mathieu.
Sorry?
Important pour un pour établir le Krishna et le Ashraya.
They're established, yes, see, it's because you're having these points, this, they're talking about the means the destruction. The others will have it, but it won't be a major aspect. Because they're just talking about it, the universe ends. But you see in Bhagavatam, when you're getting into destruction, we're talking about the four kinds of destruction. So the other Puranas may not put, the minor Puranas, or may not put that much emphasis on that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, what means even you're talking here is when we're talking about modern history, how they deal with Vamsona Charitam, and they kind of talk a bit about Pratisarga.
Yes.
In their own concept that there's something blew up and then Haribol, everything's there.
Yes.
But, I mean, it's like their concept of creation, I think it takes a couple of pages. Like that. You know, so it's not significant. It's not like they really outdid the Bible, you know. You know. So it's not, so they don't really deal properly with history.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's just the mundane stuff. Mm-hmm. Means it's Lord's included, so you can easily bring the Lord into it. But if you want to make more, then you have to put them together. So the yeah. Does that make sense?
No, can we say that devotee or people who are following the minor Purana, they can have different interpretation?
Different interpretations?
Yes,
means you could get different philosophies
different
and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just because it's not prominent, but yes. The Vedic literatures are always going to have verses that point at the Lord.
Yes.
They're always
yes.
going to have. Even yes. in these Puranas that are based around Brahma or about Shiva as more prominent, they still will point out how Krishna is the supreme. Just that people, it's like, see, you had before is that, if you go back in history, then in the, you know, in the Western kind of theater, then you have the, you know, the priests are the main aspect, and then the kings run things. But they run things directed by the priests. And you see that with the Egyptians or anything. You go back, that's how they work. Somehow or another, then in kind of the Turkey side of Greece, the Ionians, then that's like, I'm not sure how long back, but it's, you know, way back in history. Then the Ionians, they had a philosophy of relativity.
Mm-hmm.
That everything's relative to each other. So they're catching this point because it means the other ones, there's a concept of elevation and all these kind of things. So that means there's going to be more the aspect of, yes, things are relative in the material world, but then you have the jiva, which is not relative,
mm-hmm.
you know, as such.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the supreme.
Yes.
Right? But basically they're taking the supreme and the jiva out of it. So as you see the interdependence, each one's dependent on the other. So depending upon your view, you can make any one of them prominent.
Yes.
You know, or at the particular time, you can make one more prominent than the other.
Yes.
So they brought the philosophy to that level.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's relative. So that means, and then when you're saying it's relative, and it's going to be based on perspective, it's based on the vox populi.
Yes.
So they introduce this concept of vox populi.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, then you're going to have the living entities, what is popular in society, that's going to be the prominent.
Yes.
So then you see from that, then that as it progresses and becomes more established, then someone like Socrates, who's saying, no, there's an absolute standard, it doesn't fit in with the popular standard amongst the professionals of that it's about they set the standard whenever the majority establishes. So now you see it switch from basically the Brahmins and Kshatriyas as the thing. Now it's down, now it's by volume. Volume is more Vaishya Shudra thing. Because Vaishya is about how much money you make, and Shudras is about how many of you are there. You know? Right, like just like this. Have you heard in the conversation, you know, why that? Everybody knows. It's kind of like, so? What does that got to do with anything? You know what I'm saying? That's a shooter consideration. Everybody says, therefore it's right. You know? But it's like you have the whole Greek Empire and you have Socrates. He's right, they're all wrong. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't matter. You know, a million people say it's right and it's wrong, it doesn't matter. That's why in the Vedas it's about the apta, someone who is qualified. What they say, that carries weight. It doesn't matter what the populace says, if it's wrong. Right? Of course, you're going to take what the population is feeling and all that into consideration. Because even how you're going to interpret following the laws and things like that, you can, if something else is preferred, you can take a particular aspect of the law in that particular way. Right? Because there's range within the laws. Mm-hmm. So you'll take the range over to this side instead of that side. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's always a consideration. In other words, population is always considered. You know, because you have to apply it to the... But you have to start from the absolute. You can't start from what the population says. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the difficulty. Yeah. So then it's down to numbers. Right? So then that's what you're going to see, is they're going to go by numbers and volumes and these kind of things. So people are not going to see, you have 100,000 verses in Mahabharata. Only 25,000 are pastimes of the Pandavas, and within that there's some is about Krishna. So because most of it is not including Krishna, they're not going to take it as very major.
Yes.
You know, or you have the Mahabharata and then you have the Gita. They're not going to take it so majorly.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Or in that he's talking about Dharma and the different things, and he says, give up Dharma, just surrender to Krishna. That's one verse. So some catch it, some don't. Mm-hmm. So that's the difficulty. When volume is the important thing, then you won't catch the subtleties of absolute nature. But, so that's why it's an important topic that you're seeing what is ashraya. So even though the jiva is ashraya because he's in the world, so he, those three things in functioning practically, then they have that dependence upon the soul as the shelter for that because he's the one experiencing it. The material world is for the purpose of the jiva to go back to Godhead. So therefore you would say it's jiva centric, right? But, you know, for their experience. But the problem is they're not the one controlling the experience. The Lord is. So he's the ultimate shelter. Because from him come jivas and from him comes the material energy. And he controls both. Does that make sense? So he's the ultimate shelter. But otherwise, if there's no jivas in the material world, you don't need the material world. But it means the spiritual world goes on fine without it. It's not like there's something lacking there. So.
It's like a jail.
Yeah, it's a jail. It's exactly that. The meaning Durga means jail. So she's the warden. So if she's the one that makes it work, then she's called Durga. This does not mean that the 10 top subjects are discussed in order in the different cantos of Bhagavatam, since Bhagavatam has 12 cantos. Since the 10 topics are mentioned in the second canto, counting from the third canto to the 12th canto, to make 10 topics does not match the contents. Like you're saying, oh, now it's introduced, and when you introduce a list of topics, then after that, then the next thing is that you're going to, you know, break it down, then you're going to give the full explanation. So that doesn't work either. You know, because you're saying, okay, there's 10 and there's 12, so how do we cut some out? So if it's in the second, so then we cut it out, so then we count from the third, that way we get 10. Right? To make 10 does not match the contents. For instance, destruction, Nirodha, is discussed in the 10th, 11th, and 12th cantos, but not in the 8th canto. Nirodha is the 8th topic. It is also not possible to match other topics with other cantos successively. successively. Sridhar Swami says, in the 10th canto, in order to spread the pure glory of Krishna, destruction, nirodha, of the evil kings because they caused the decline in dharma is described. Four types of destruction, starting with Prakriti, are described previously. Right, so then there you bring it out that he's establishing dharma, so there's a destruction there. Mm-hmm. Specifically of those kings that are bad. So you're seeing you're having nirodha there, your destruction of kings, and it's also vamsanucharita. You're seeing about the kings, the activities of the kings. So in this case, Krishna as a king, what he's doing, and then these other dynasties of kings, and what's going on with them. Right? So you have the main kings, and then you'll relate all other kings in relationship to them. Right? He states in the 10th canto, the main description is that of Krishna, the Ashraya. Dasame, dasamam, lakshyam, Ashrita Shraya Vigraham. In the 10th canto, there is a description of the Ashraya Vigraha, qualified as the 10th topic. One may find the other topics in many cantos as well. So they're all throughout. There may be a prominence like that. In general, all topics are described in all cantos, either secondarily or primarily. That is Sridhar Swami's opinion. It has already been stated. Dasamasya vishudhyartam navanam iha lakshanam varnayanti mahatmana shutenartena chanjasa. The devotee, great devotees such as Vidura and Maitreya, describe properly the 9 topics in order to impart the highest knowledge of the 10th topic through words of the scriptures and stories to illustrate their meaning. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10, 1-2. Thus, all topics are described in different places. Therefore, the first and second cantos are included as part of the Bhagavatam. They are not excluded because there are 10 topics. It is concluded there is no sequence in narrating the 10 topics. Right? Because we see just in Vidura and Maitreya's discussion, all 9 topics are discussed. So that one can appreciate the 10. So, something says, yeah. Anucheta Prakashika. So Prabhupada will give a theme to the Bhagavatam, a particular canto. That'll be what's the primary aspect of it. But it doesn't mean the other ones aren't there. Right? So what we're talking about is that some will try to say, no, it's about this topic. And that. But it's artificial. It doesn't fit. You know, it sounds like a great idea. But the problem is then for this intellectual satisfaction of it, you know, of that kind of order, then it doesn't match. You know. So yes. Yes, means the Upanishads, it's always about, those 5 topics, and the Puranas, it means if they're bigger, they're about 10, and if they're smaller, they're about 5. Like that. So the main historical elements that are there, they don't get into so much fine of what's the purpose of it and all that. So all Puranas will have the 5 topics, and then the major Puranas will have an additional 5. Means the point is it's there. The difficulty is because it's Vedic Sanskrit, and in Vedic Sanskrit the things will be alluded to. So what you have to look at is in the purports, right? In Prabhupada's purports, there's where you're going to see the jiva. Right? If it's not so much direct, because otherwise, who's seeing? You understand? Who's asking the Lord to remove the effulgence? Who has to learn about knowledge and ignorance side by side? Who is getting the quota? You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is that it's there. Because otherwise, who is it? You know? So, it's just that's the whole point of the Upanishads, is they tend to be a little bit more indirect or a little bit more not as obvious. That's the whole point why Vedanta Sutra being written, it makes it a little bit more clear. But it's not until Bhagavatam is written that then it actually becomes clear. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because it's at the point of applying it. So I guess it's accepting that it's already understood, and so then you're just applying. So?
In the Bhagavatam, Gita and Bhagavatam, Jivatata was given more openly in Upanishads
is more hidden. Everything's more hidden. Because the point is that people, means the jivas, if they were really interested in Vaishnavism, why did they leave the spiritual world in the first place? Right? So they've come to the material world because they're interested in something other than the absolute truth. Right? But it's not that they don't accept aspects of the spiritual position. It's just which ones are important to them. So then, as they come into the material world, then so many options are given of what you can now do with this absolute knowledge. And so which parts you want to notice, which parts you want to ignore, which kind of, conclusions you want to come up with. You know, all these things you can do. Does that make sense? And then doing that, then you can come up with your different ideals, therefore you have something to do, some motive to do, and everything like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, that kind of aspect is that then you have to see that. Okay. Anucheta Prakashika. Previously it was shown that Sutta Goswami, Sukadeva Goswami, and Srila Vyasadeva had the same conviction about what is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. Here, Srila Jiva Goswami again substantiates that idea by quoting the statements of Sutta Goswami regarding the characteristics of a Mahapurana. Although the 10 categories of Sri Sutta gave seem to differ from those of Sukadeva Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami shows that in essence they are the same. Right? Mm-hmm. The essential principle is the same. You're bringing out maybe a different aspect of it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Like let's say someone's bringing out and the meal, the arrangements. Someone's bringing out the colors. Someone's bringing out the fragrance. Someone's bringing out the variety of tastes. Right? Because all of that goes to making the meal very nice. But it's still about the meal. Like that. In Bhavartha Deepika, while commenting on verse 279 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sridhar Swami offers the following reconciliation between the 10 topics. So then we're going to... Okay, it keeps going. So that's Sukadev Goswami in 2.10.1 and Sutta Goswami in 12.7.9-10. So Sarga, the primary creation, is Sarga. Visarga, secondary Krishna creation, Visarga. Stana, maintenance, so then it's called Vritti. So what was the Vritti? What was the English for that? No, that would be Vritti. Didn't he say this is the 12, right? Yeah. So then he says maintenance, there's sustenance, rule of various dynasties can't take. Then proshanam, raksha, uti, material desires, hetu, right? Because that's your reason, right? You have material desires, and so the reason is you have material desires. That's why you're here, right? Manvantara, reign of manus, antara. Ishanu Kata, activities of the Lord as devotees. Vamsa and Vamsanu Charita. Because the point is, you see in Bhagavatam, the Vamsa and Vamsanu Charita means the coming down, all the different living entities and everything, they're all in context of Krishna and his pastimes. That's the uniqueness of Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? Nirodha, annihilation, and then Samsta. And then mukti, liberation, is also what same, samsta. Oh, because you have Vamsa and Vamsacharita together. Okay, Nirodha and Mukti, because you have in the one, Nirodha is a varieties of annihilation, and then Mukti as a separate topic. But the point is, Mukti is the fourth Nirodha. Yeah, you understand?
Yeah.
So basically you say this is where the main difference is, and because of that, then when you give the Vamsa and Vamsanucharita, Vamsanucharita means kings. Vamsa means then how it's coming down to Prajapatis and all that, so that can include anything. So then the stories of the Lord in the context with his devotees and all his pastimes covers that. Right? Because in the other Puranas, they just have to say this Manu was here and that Prajapati and this king. They don't have to necessarily refer to the Lord. So they'll, in some way, but not necessarily in the pastime. But Bhagavatam, it will. So it already takes care. Ashraya, the supreme shelters, apashraya. Right? So that makes sense? So basically, it's all exactly the same. It's just that you're bringing the mukti as the fourth nirodha, the actual destruction. Right? Because otherwise, you see, until you're liberated, and this liberation means in the connection of service to the Lord, your devotion. Because that means because you're talking about in the material world, there's four kinds of destruction. So that mukti of the impersonalists and that, they stay in the material world. They never actually get out.
Yes.
So they don't actually accomplish it.
Yes.
Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah. As mentioned before, the ultimate purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam is to explain the 10th item, Ashraya, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it is illogical to expect that the other 9 topics will be dealt with in a successive manner, like a mathematical equation. Rather, they are the tools used to clarify and establish the position of the Supreme Lord. One should not insist on a consecutive order to the 10 topics, nor try to minimize the importance of the first 2 cantos. Srila Jiva Goswami's claim from the start was that the Srimad Bhagavatam revolves around Sri Krishna, who is the supreme shelter of all existence, right? So you see him fully introduced in the 3rd chapter of the 1st canto, with all his avatars. Right? We understand then that it speaks about Sri Krishna in the beginning, the middle, and the end, and not just in the 10th canto. A detailed explanation of this is in Sri Krishna Sandarbha. Another aspect of why it's not chronological, because if you wanted a chronological kind of thing like that, then you could have Vedanta Sutra then does that very nicely. Right? So it's an intellectual thing. But here, these are conversations. That's why the Purana is more important. The conversation is going to go by how the person is understanding and feeling at the moment. And so then you're describing. So it's not that one description, you know, it's going to go through in just this logical order. It's going to go according to it. He's telling one thing. He's asked a question, Parikshit Maharaj. Then he's telling something. But in telling that, some other topic comes up, side topic, and he asks about that. Then you go into the side topic. Mm-hmm. Having explained that, then he goes back into that main topic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always going to be mixed because it's a conversation, and that's how we appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, why is it we're very comfortable reading through Bhagavatam and spending time, but let's say something like Vedanta Sutra, we're less? Because of that, because it's a conversation, as opposed to just a logical presentation.
It's very personal. It's very personal.
Yes, very personal. Very personal. And so, you don't mind that logical sequence once you've finished everything.
Yes.
Right? You see, is that you've gone through the whole, what is it? 19 chapters? No. 17 chapters of Gita. Then in the 18th, now it'll give some kind of logical presentation. And you're cool with that because you're familiar.
Yes.
But when you're not familiar, you have to go into it, how much you can understand and then other things that support and side things. Once you know it all, that's the point of the thematic study. Thematic study means now you just go by these different aspects. Right, you can put them in a logical order, or do whatever you like with them, but you already know all the subject matter. Now you're putting it together so you're clear how it connects.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah. It's classical Sanskrit because there's no swaras. But the point is it's presenting the Upanishads, so it'll be a little bit more direct and clear, but it's still, because it's so concise, that's where the problem will be. The Upanishads aren't necessarily concise, it's just that the words they use, how they use the words, much of the time is obscure. It's not those who, let's say, are familiar with classical Sanskrit may not be very comfortable with the Vedic Sanskrit, just because it will use terms in a way that in classical Sanskrit you generally don't use. You know, just like you see even Monier Williams, he has a separate dictionary for Vedic Sanskrit. Like that, just because it can be used in so many different ways that you wouldn't necessarily use it. Does that make sense? Okay.
About the Veda, can we say that it's not everyone can study the Veda?
It'll be more difficult. Because basically, if you understand Bhagavatam and this perspective and can relate to technical ways of dealing, then the Veda won't be as difficult.
Yes.
Because you have to, this means like here is that we're taking the thing, we're taking the jiva. Then you have the eye, you have the sense of seeing, and you have the sun. And the demigod therefore in charge of the sun. So then, with that aspect, that's what's actually going on. Mm-hmm. So then, in this, because the three are interconnected and interdependent, and they're dealing with the same thing, I could deal with any of these.
Mm-hmm.
I could use any one of them to explain the same aspect. Therefore, he's saying, he sees, but he does not see.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why not? Because the whole point is who's the seer here? Is the jiva. And why is the jiva there? It's because the Lord is the ultimate, Paramatma. So, he who knows Paramatma, he sees. He who doesn't know Paramatma doesn't see, even though he's seeing. That's Vedic. Does that make sense? So you have to already actually understand that to appreciate. So you hear from Guru. Guru would go through and explain all this. So it'll come up. It won't be as categorized. So the Veda, it's the same way. It's all throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's brought together. All those philosophical points that are explained in the Upanishads. But because they use that same kind of language, mm-hmm. then it may or may not be appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Because something in any one of its forms can be used, depending on which one you want to bring out. You know, so therefore you had that, remember, I think it's Chandogya, where somebody's asking Indra, you know, about the absolute, and then he says, worship Indra.
Yes.
But what he means is, because he's not Indra. Right? Means Indra, the post, is made up of that potency to control the universe. But he as the jiva is not that potency. So he is a jiva, as mentioning to the other jiva, that you have to worship Indra. Because that means Indra means his post isn't actually Indra. It's empowered by Krishna to function in that capacity. So that means Krishna's Indra. But you won't necessarily catch it there. Classical, generally, it may be slightly indirect in the way it's the use of poetics, but we're generally more used to poetics. So that's why it's generally easier to deal.
Mm-hmm.
So just because someone's good in classical Sanskrit doesn't mean at all they'll be good in Vedic. They might, but it's not automatic. Oh, I know Sanskrit, so what? Like that. Does that make sense? Like, you know, like we have so many Sanskritists in our society. They know Sanskrit very nicely and all that. They can translate and do all that. But except for, means Srila Prabhupada very comfortably is translating Ishupanishad, but the only other one I've seen that can translate Vedic stuff comfortably is Bhanuman. No other Sanskritist actually understands. They may agree with this point or not, but, you know, dealing with Vedic Sanskrit, you can say they don't know. You know what I'm saying? You know, like there's that, in Bhagavatam, there's the verse about Tvasta doing the sacrifice to make an enemy of Indra.
Yes.
You know? But because he chanted the verse, the one syllable, either long or short, whichever it was, then instead of getting someone who was the enemy of Indra, someone who Indra was his enemy. Right? And I've seen forums where all the Sanskrit systems societies sit around and making their opinions about what are they talking about, you know, by this grammatical rule, this is this, that, so what are they talking about? Because they have no idea of Vedic Sanskrit.
They have no idea what they're talking about.
They have no idea what they're talking about. I mean, like zero. Because it's the rules they know, the Vedic grammar's beyond that. Right? There's like 3,000 sutras dealing with classical grammar. There's about 2,700 dealing with classical grammar. Then there's another 300 beyond that, the Vedic. Unless you know those and know how to apply it, because it includes the tonal quality, the swara. So they're just thinking, oh, it's just the rule. It's the swara also. And the grammar makes the swara shows what the, you know, it's a whole different thing. That's why it's a different topic. So therefore, in the Rig Veda and also and Atharva Veda, then you have situations where they put in this mark that makes a short vowel long and makes a short vowel, instead of it being sorita, the middle note, makes it the upper note. Like that. It has a natural pattern and all that. So if you know the Yajurveda Purusha Shukta, then once you catch how the Rig Veda one's working, you can chant it. But it works in a different way. So therefore, it's one of those. Either he had that I think it's called Pratyaya or something. That one of those, he either missed it, or you know, he chanted it where it's not supposed to be. One or the other. So therefore, what's, you know, by grammar it's short, right? It means by regular grammar it's short, but by the particular Vedic grammar in this situation it becomes long. So either way, he mistake one for the other. And so they just go on pontificating about that. So then what happens? Bhagavatam's wrong, Prabhupada's wrong, and only they're right because they learned some university grammar. You know, it's like, what in India you teach to the, you know, the newest kids. The grammar they know, people will know in the first couple of years when they're 5, 6, 7 years old. In fact, they probably already, you know, they've already come speaking that when they come to the school. You know what I'm saying? So it's a whole different thing. That just because you learned it later doesn't mean you're better at it. You know, it's just like you're 50 years old and you learned to roller skate. That doesn't mean you're better than the 6-year-old who's roller skating. He's probably way better than you. But the idea is, I learned it later, so therefore I'm expert. So we have to be very, very careful about these things. Does that make sense? You know, no offense to their intelligence and all that. They just don't know the area that they're dealing with. Classical, they know. Their teachers have taught them. Their teachers in university don't know. So why would they know?
He translated himself.
That's the whole point, is that anybody who's talking about Prabhupada doesn't know. These are rascal. That means number one is not enough to say. You don't get more rascal than that. You can't get more rascal than someone who doesn't. It's just like we just read. What is it? Was it here? Yeah, we just see here is that Prabhupada's talking. We were just going through this technical stuff about the Adiatmika, Adidaivika, and Adibhautika. And then here's the purport in the second canto. Prabhupada's explaining it just so pleasantly. So there's been nothing that the Acharyas have given, no matter how technical it is, that's not in purport by Srila Prabhupada. But because he says it so pleasantly, without all the fancy words, that makes academics feel, you know, makes their hairs stand on end. He just uses common, ordinary language to explain that, which those individuals cannot do in a million years. And without their big words, they can't talk. Prabhupada can just use lay language and explain the most technical philosophical points or logical points. That's master. They're expert. We're not doubting that they're experts. But we're saying they're not masters. And experts should not make comments about masters. It's just not their position. So, Prabhupada is able to do all this very comfortably. So that's the whole point. Does that make sense? So it's that they know these things. Because we have to remember is that we always, the devotees tend to stay away from the Vedic. You know, because we have Pancharatra, we lean with that. But in Braj, there's a more prominence of Vedic than Pancharatra. They do all the yajnas, and all those yajnas are done in Vedic Sanskrit. Every morning when you hear, it says, in the morning when they get up, you can hear all the Brahmins doing the chanting their mantras for the yajnas and all. So they'll have, means they're speaking in classical, or they'll be like, but they're quite aware and comfortable with Vedic stuff. And then, like I said, if you know the one, how much does it take to learn the other? It's just they don't make the endeavor. Because if you learn Sanskrit by Harinamamrita Vyakaran, then to learn the Vedic is very easy. But if you've learned it by Monier Williams and that course, that, you know, 3-month course in university, then it's way beyond your capacity. You know, that's the thing, is becoming proud of your intelligence is not devotional. It doesn't have any value in devotion. Right? That's why the story is there of Dr. Frog. He's just puffed up. Does that make sense? So we have to be very, very careful in this. We don't mind that, you know, we take pot shots at academics or scholars or this or that, you know, but we don't take pot shots at the scholarliness of the acharyas. And if we're not understanding how they're scholarly, that's our weakness. When Prabhupada says Jiva Goswami is the greatest, you know, scholar in the modern age, modern means, in according to Manu, means non-Vedic. So that means in the non-Vedic age, means in India it's there, but during this time means the last so many thousand years, you know, because West always goes back to the Greeks. Right? So that means in the last 3,000 years there's never been a greater scholar. It doesn't mean just within the Gaudiyas, yes, he's the greatest scholar. It means he puts any scholar, you know, down. It's just they don't understand. They're not getting how clear and how exact it is. And you see the points he makes, Prabhupada makes them all in comfortable language. But that's the whole point. He's not trying to make himself a big scholar in that. When you think of Prabhupada, you don't think he's a scholar, but you don't think of him as a scholar. There's no one who's a better cook, but you don't think of him as a chef. There's no one who's a better manager, but you don't think of him as an administrator. You know what I'm saying? His music is unparalleled, but you don't think of him as a musician. People who really know the essence, they understand how he runs it, how he does it. So we always have to be very, very careful to not in any way... you know, Prabhupada, you know, this or that or so many things like that. You know, this means a world without people like this would be a better place. You know, if they think, oh, but then we're just accepting blindly. Whatever, we're accepting and they're blind. Yeah, so that way it works. That makes sense. So we don't tolerate. Doesn't matter. You're somebody within ISKCON. You're initiated. You're senior. We don't care. On this point, we just don't care. Outside of this point, we'll always follow etiquette and deal and everything nicely. But you bring up these points about Prabhupada. We don't care. You make these comments, then it's just not a place to go. You know, you don't have nice words to describe their position. You know, other than how Prabhupada uses, you know, fools, greatest fools, foolish, unfortunate, you know, these kind of, Prabhupada even very nicely says these, you know, it's like these guys who mess up the whole society and that, he just calls them rascals, you know, so, yeah. So we have to fall back on that, because it's the etiquette, right? You know, otherwise, coming from the Mlecha and Yavana background, we have a lot more choice words, like, you know, functioning within the, how you say, the Vedic community, then we'll stick to unfortunate fools and rascals. Does that make sense? You know, it's like Srila Prabhupada mentions the devotee was behaving a certain way. He said he's behaving like a shudra. He didn't say he is a shudra. He's just behaving like a shudra. So they're behaving like rascals, like fools, like this. Yeah. They don't have to. They can just see it properly and correct it. They're intelligent. Why not? But if they're proud, then they'll be their intelligence will get in the way. They'll trip over it. You know, it's like if your shirt's too big, you trip over it. You know, stuff like that. So, like that. Yes.
Are there different instances of, say, when you know someone's trying to insult Krishna, but it turns out to be a compliment?
Yes.
Or anytime anyone says anything to Srimati Radharani, brush, tree, whatever, it always means Krishna to her. Are those instances of Vedic Sanskrit over classical Sanskrit? Like, how anything refer to Krishna?
No, no. Doesn't mean you can get it in either. The whole point is that they're both. In other words, the Veda, it comes in that form of the Vedic Sanskrit, but they're both coming from Krishna,
right?
Like that. So it's just a matter of they're both correct. It's just a matter of going more deeply into it. I thought you were going to say, could we take these statements by others and then go back into grammar and then make them into glorification of Prabhupada and the Acharyas? That would be a very nice way to do it. That would be a good service, right? But no, it's not necessarily. It's just that maybe using that kind of technique that they can go deeper into it. Because you see, the Acharyas, when they're working, with the Upanishads, and they don't have a problem. It's not that they stop it here. Our devotees don't go into. They don't like to go back to these things. So the point is they can comfortably deal with it because there's only one subject of knowledge, and that's Krishna. And then there's different ways it's presented. So in the Puranas there'll be one way, Ayurveda another way, and the Stapanaveda a different way. So also in the Upanishads it'll be different.
So it's just a matter of absorption, not of.
Yeah, it's more of a matter of, let's say, a realization. Because someone's, let's say, very clever, he might be able to learn these different topics and see their connection. But it'll still be gyan. There'll be some shortage there. Yeah. But in vigyan, then they know. That's the point, is that the gopis who are not scholars, right, because they didn't specifically study and this and that, when they come down here to preach, they're beyond scholars down here. Like that, because they just see it that way. You know what I'm saying? The scholar is intellectually trying to put it all together and make it out. But someone who's actually experienced it can say it without all that technicalness. So that's the whole point. They've seen. They know. They know Krishna. They're with Krishna. So all these things are just very obvious. So their realization is there. So the Vedas are only trying to bring us to that realization. They're just explaining it in technical ways, and logical ways, or practical ways, or, you know, in whichever kind of conditioning we have that we'll relate to. So if someone's into medicine, then they'll explain Krishna according to medicine. Mm-hmm. If they're into architecture, they'll explain it according to architecture. If they're into music, he'll explain Krishna according to music. Now, because of the secondary, they'll tend to only see the music part and not see how it's Krishna. But it's not that it's the same thing, because otherwise it's rasa. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so they'll do things. They don't even know what they're doing. You know, they're bringing out a raga, and it brings that whole mood. But they're thinking it's the technique. But the point is no, that's an attitude of Krishna, or attitude of Radharani. And so then you're bringing out that mood of devotion. That's what it's for, but they're just using the mechanics. They don't know how to take it back.
Maharaj, the devotees from the spiritual world, they are all masters of the science.
They're all masters. In Krishna consciousness, they're all masters. And then within masters, there's more masters. So Radharani's the top. And then like that, then it comes down. But that's it. They're total masters. The Brajbasis. Others, then they'll be strong in certain areas. And it's all the absolute truth. So they know enough to get you to that point in the spiritual world, but they don't know what the Brajbasis know. Does that make sense? Okay, Shri Swami follows. Okay, we did that, reconciliation. As mentioned before, the ultimate purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam is to explain the tenth item, Ashraya, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it is illogical to expect that the other nine subjects will be dealt with in a successive manner, like a mathematical equation. Rather, they are tools used to clarify and establish the position of the Supreme Lord. One should not insist on a consecutive order into the ten topics, nor try to minimize the importance of the first two cantos. I think we read this, right? Okay. Sarva Sambhadini. Who's Sarva Sambhadini? Sometimes we say Jiva Goswami, and sometimes, don't we? We never say Jiva, we just say Sarva Sambhadini.
They don't commentary on the...
Oh, I see. Okay. Really? I always thought we had Jiva Goswami. Oh, that's a Nectar Devotion. Ah, okay. Okay, so this is his own commentary on this. Generally, all topics are in all cantos. Sarga is chiefly in the second and third cantos. Visarga is in the second, third, and fourth cantos. Vritti from Kama is in the third canto. Not satisfied with his body, which became full of ignorance, Brahma gave up that body. Thus, this body transformed into night, which gave rise to hunger and thirst. That's why if you stay up too late, you get hungry and thirsty. Interesting. Yakshas and Rakshasas respected the night. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:10:9. So that, they like to stay up all night and party, right? You know, like 3:10:19. And eat, right?
Yeah.
Vritti. Vritti, according to rules, is discussed in the 7th and 11th cantos. Vritti is?
Maintenance,
okay. While describing Varnashram, Raksha is discussed in all cantos. Manvantara is described in the 8th canto. Vamsa and Vamsanucharitam are described in the 4th and 9th cantos. Samstha is described in the 11th and 12th cantos. Hetu is described in the 3rd and 11th cantos by Kapila and the Lord. Apashraya is discussed primarily in the 10th canto. Right, so all subjects are in all cantos, but you could say as different ones are primarily there. And so then accordingly, then it goes. So we see Prabhupada then would generally name according to like this. What's the prominence? But it doesn't mean that it's not having the other aspects.
Every canto has a title.
Sorry?
Every canto has
Yes, what I'm saying is what's the prominent, what's the primary aspect. But all the other ones are there. So whichever is prominent and everything, that becomes. So you kind of catch a theme.
Yeah.
You'll generally put a verse there also so you kind of catch what's the mood of that whole canto. Okay.
Is it Srila Prabhupada who makes the title of the canto?
Yes, you make the title, but it's not that he doesn't take from the acharyas.
Yes.
Like that. That's what you'll always see is he's saying these things, but you'll find what he says, you'll see the acharyas are saying. What the acharyas are saying, you'll see Prabhupada saying. So that's the thing. There's no such thing as a contradiction between acharyas, between the scriptures, between the acharyas and the scriptures. It's only perceived that it's there, but it's not. Like these two, we see that there's no difference between these two lists. It's just that one is bringing out more of an emphasis here and one more there. Because the whole point is it's about that ultimate liberation. Right? And so this one is in the 12th canto. So naturally you finish the whole thing, so it's about coming to that ultimate position. Srila Balade Vidibhusha. The 10 topics of Bhagavatam are described in another way, with different names and different meanings to some degree. Some foolish persons associate these 10 topics of the Purana sequentially with the canto, starting with the 3rd canto. Okay. So just on the 10 topics, they're described in another way, with different names and different meanings to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it just means that the principle is the same. The details are brought out in a different way.
Yes.
Just like we see within the Gotama's listing of the five ungas of the logical syllogism,
yes,
and then how Vyasadeva is using it in Vedanta Sutra. Mm-hmm. So they're the same. It's just that one is emphasizing the argument aspect,
mm-hmm,
and one's just is the presentation.
Yes.
Because the point is you can present things logically, and in a presentation, if there's people there, a discussion comes up. But it's about your presentation, and you'll deal with the doubts.
Yes.
But since the Vyanta Sutra is about removing doubts, it puts that emphasis on that side. So it's given a different name. Because otherwise, if you use the one name, you think, oh, it means this. And if I give the other meaning, you say, oh, it means that. But then the problem comes is that one doesn't see that they're both the same thing. Does that make sense? Okay, just had a devotee the other day, about a month ago. I was saying this in the early noughts. You know? Like, 15, 16 years ago. Telling them that this is how it is, because they were trying to put it together in the logic course, and they couldn't because of these two. It never got made. And I was saying, that's because these two, it's like this. And they were saying, no, this, that, and then the other day they came up and said, well, actually, that's the way it is. So does that make sense? So they make different names and different meanings to some degree to bring out some, to emphasize something. Because you have to also see where it's mentioned in the topic. What was the question?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Who are they talking to? Mm-hmm. Yes.
How many people are left comparing Vedanta?
How many?
5 or 10?
No. And here we're talking about in logic. That you have your thesis, you have your reasoning, you have your explanation, you have your synthesis, and then you have your conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
That's how logic is presented, right? So then the terms Gotama uses are one thing, but when Vyasadeva is applying that in Vedanta Sutra, he uses different terminology, right? And then Acharyas may use either. Prabhupada generally always uses Gotamas like that, but then you see that but people get confused. Because it's dynamic. It's just you're logically presenting this is how it works, but when you present it, there's going to be the overlaps and everything's going to go back and forth. So when one thing happens in one place, the tendency is to categorize it like that. So it can be done as long as you understand the overall, because you want to bring something out. Yes.
It happens very often.
Yes.
So should we get into real explanation to give the whole picture to the people, or just try to because it's so narrow what usually people understand, and if they catch something at one place it should always be like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No, but
yes, but it has to mature. It's just like, let's say, when you're explaining to the 2 or 3 year old some social concept, you explain to them. Then, as they grow up, you'll see when they hit like 4 or 5, they'll start to notice examples where it's not always exactly like that. And then you have to explain it to them to broaden their understanding. So, say as much as they can catch it at that point, and then as you go, then you have to start bringing in these things like that. Or you can say it from the beginning, but they'll still only catch it later. Right? You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's like, So it's whichever, and then it's consistent because you've always been saying both of these. Yeah, so it's because it's a matter of it's an understanding. It's the summit. It's when they actually realize it. That's when it actually makes sense. That's the difference. Is that these Prabhupada's core? It's about realizing and valuing, therefore practicing it and applying it in your life. That's the whole thing. So. To just memorize something is not enough. It means things you have to know, you have to be familiar, you need to memorize stuff. But that doesn't mean that now you know. That means you've memorized.
Yeah.
You know, like that. Does that make sense?
For example, for this Pansiganyaya, usually we write with Gautama system, but for speaking, there is doubt.
Yes, yes, like that. Yeah. Because it's not that it's not there, but it's just that they overlap, because the point is somebody's thesis, somebody else's thesis is going to only going to come up because you've given your reason.
Yes.
I say my point, then that doesn't necessarily mean, because I'm saying it concisely.
Yes.
So they want to see my reason. Okay, you said that, but what's your angle on it? Because it may be, okay, you're using different words, or you're different in a different angle. It's, you know, you're talking the same thing, but, you know, coming from a different kind of perspective. So, you know, we're cool with that. But once you say your reason, now they understand your angle. Now their doubt comes up. So then calling the second point doubt, or calling it reason, it's the same thing. Because unless you give your reason, they can't have their doubt. And they'll only have a doubt because of your reason. So they're interrelated. Or make it, no, the doubt's completely different than a reason. It's a, we're talking a discussion here. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. And then what's the third point? Is you're going to remove doubts. So it's the third point is naturally then what you're dealing with there. But in there, having their doubt having come up, now they've had the doubt on the second level. But where they're going to express it, now they're going to explain theirs, it'll be on the third. So now you're going to deal with that. So now that'll be the Samshaya and the Uttara and like this. Right? And then you're going to make your point, that'll be the you know what I'm saying? The Vishaya, then from that they'll have another doubt. So it's dynamic. It'll just keep going. And you bring it to the point where you've cleared their doubts, now you're showing that what they're saying and what you're saying are not different. But what you're saying includes what they're saying. And then you're going to give a conclusion, and that conclusion should be now how you're practically going to use it. I've said the point, but now it's like how, having understood and appreciate, how you're going to apply it. Does that make sense? So then that gives the aspect. So whether you're just saying, because technically whatever exact words you use that your thesis, you could use at the conclusion. But they're bringing out that it actually has to have something more to it. Does that make sense? So that's why you'll see if you read the in Prabhupada's purports, these, you know, bigger purports, you read the first sentence and you read those last sentence or two, you'll see they're the same, but the last ones have a practical application. So it's there. And you'll see Prabhupada, some may say, that's the doubt. You know, and the Acharyas are always using that. You know, what they put in quotations is the doubt. You know, when we're going along here. Mm-hmm. Okay, so. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Okay. So, some foolish people associate... So, again, just foolish. That's all the more we get. Some foolish people... Because, basically, if you're looking at it, the mistakes of the living entity are because of not being God-conscious. Mm-hmm. So they're acting in a foolish way, or a childish way, or an immature way, or, you know, whatever is the particular, like that. But within the context, then they're very big. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You know, like if you have some kids, and they're trying to play a game and this and that, but in their world, that's all in all. So this guy won't give the toy, or this guy won't let this guy be this one, you know, I want to be the king, he won't let me be the king, and this and that. And it's a big meltdown there. But for the adults, it's kind of like, can't you guys just cooperate? Or, you know, come here, have something to eat. You know? So that's what's happening, is that on the material platform, people look like they're big and powerful and intelligent and all this and that, but they're still just fools, they're immature, they'll be set, unless they're God conscious. And because you're dealing with illusion, it's not that big of a deal. Ultimately, it's not that big because it's an illusion anyway. So then, what's the whole thing? The guy says he's the big, you know, manager, but he's not, right? The Adiatmik is doing the management, right? He's the seer. He wants to be involved. He identifies, and because someone else wants to, you know, it's just like two guys driving cars. You know, You know, it's all about the cars, but it's them. They're doing the driving. That's what they think. You know, so that's the thing. So ultimately, it's not that major a thing when you're pulling back like that. When you go into the universal perspective, then it's not that big of a deal. But then when you go down to the jiva's perspective from there, then it's a big deal. Why is it a big deal? Because then their progress back to Godhead is going to be seriously impeded. So that's why then he's from that. So that's why you see on one side it's a big deal, and another it's not a big deal. Because on the universal level, who cares if someone doesn't appreciate Krishna or the acharyas or the scripture? Who cares? What do they matter? Does Brahma, the Pajapatis, the demigods, does anyone, even their dog doesn't care? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, the guy's sitting in his bathtub and suddenly he has an epiphany and he starts running around naked, you know, shouting and that. His dog will just kind of look up and go, that's weird. You know? That's it. So that's all. It doesn't matter. But when you bring it down to the level of the jiva, then it matters, because now the person, if they're not going back to Godhead. It's stopped for some time. You know, just like that one devotee who went to Prabhupada and says, I found a new spiritual master. I found, you know, someone who can really give me the solid things. So he wanted his blessings, because, you know, he spent some time with Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, yes, I give you the blessings that you'll not meet a bona fide spiritual master for 1,000,000 lifetimes. You know? So it's major on that level. But as far as the universe cares, it's like, who cares? He's just another fool in a long list of fools. You know, it's like another grain of sand on the beach. It's like, whoopee. You know, aren't I so intelligent? Yeah, go and join the, you know. You know, it's like, who cares? But as far as them progressing and others then becoming influenced or like that, it's a major thing. So you have these two angles. That from the jiva as ashraya, and that from the Lord as ashraya. Because, you know, people don't believe he's God, doesn't make him less God. It just doesn't, you know, yeah. The author refutes. Okay. Some foolish people associate these 10 topics of the Puranas sequentially with the canto, starting with the 3rd canto. The author refutes this view. This disturbs the nature of the Bhagavatam with 12 cantos and 18,000 verses, since it admits 2 cantos. It would not be the complete Bhagavatam if one claims that Sukadeva spoke only 10 cantos. The first and the 12th would not have any value. Right? Because then you would have to count the start from the second and go to the 11th, right? But they're taking from the 3rd and going to the 12th, you know, like that. So it's a problem. The 18,000 verses were studied by Sukadeva from his father and recited by him. This is a fact. The information is eternally accomplished. That is also a fact. So it means these are there. It's always there. There's always the Bhagavatam. But at some point it comes revealed to Vyasadeva. He reveals it to his son. He speaks it, then Sukadeva, and then Vyasadeva writes that Bhagavatam, that rendition down, like that. Okay. Riti. In the next Anucheta, Srila Jiva Goswami gives the definition of the first 7 of the 10 items listed by Sutta Goswami in the 12th canto. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaurapena.